Welcome to The State of Sport with me, Ben Karpinski, where I have numerous smart conversations with smart people from the world of sport. Anything ranging from the digital side of things to the on-field. Sport is very exciting right now, and I think post-pandemic we have some incredible opportunities to not only enjoy sport more, but also know a whole lot more about it. In this episode of the podcast, we are talking the state of the digital sports fan. So much has happened since smartphones are coming to our lives, and there's no better person to talk about this than Sean Villiers. Sean, how's it going?
Morning, Ben. Thanks for having me. Great to be here and chatting about how this new fan is changing.
Yeah, when I started this podcast, or wanted to start this podcast, you're the first person that came to mind because you are the managing director of Nielsen Sports Africa, which, of course, is the global leader in sports sponsorship, marketing, research, and analytics. Quite a mouthful, that. And obviously, you're at the forefront of so many different things here, and you see what happens with sport. You know, there's nothing better than data, analytics, and insights, because I'm a massive numbers nerd, despite the fact that I'm not very mathematically inclined. It's that there are so many moving parts of sport, and you really are at the forefront of that. How did you get into this role, first and foremost, and what is your background within sport?
Look, I've worked in the sports sponsorship space and the sports business side of my whole life, and then managed to land a role at Nielsen from a global point of view for the South Africa business. And a lot has changed, for many businesses in South Africa and globally. The pandemic has changed a lot for many businesses, and we were no different. Quite rightly, you say that from a Nielsen point of view, we, you know, leaders from a global and local point of view when it comes to kind of data and analytics. And, you know, we find ourselves in the fortunate position that we get to work with everyone that works in the business side of sports, from rights holders and brands and agencies and broadcasters. So there's no one really that we don't work with, which is a really great thing for us. In the sense that we really get a bird's eye view of what's happening across board, and really get to add some insights and data and research where it's needed for people to make key kind of sports business decisions.
Well, that's just the thing there, making key decisions, because when it comes to business for sport, it can't just be emotion. It can't just be, I like that, or that feels good. And that's a really cool thing about where you're positioned. So, I mean, I know from my personal business standpoint, sport made a lot of sense to me, and sports seemed quite straightforward to a certain degree. COVID happened, the pandemic happened. We went into the hashtag unprecedented times. You, of course, were at Nielsen prior to that, and now you are managing director of that a company. What did the pandemic, if you can try to trace this down, how did that really affect your business? Because not only, sorry, just to kind of preface that, before the pandemic, you knew what you were kind of researching. You knew the kind of things you were looking to give to clients. Suddenly, sport stopped. So I think before we get into the state of the digital sports fan, which obviously is the future, the current, and a little bit of the past, how did the pandemic kind of shape how you operate within sports, and what are the kind of your focuses and how they changed?
Well, our clients went through a massive sort of uncertain stage in their marketing and portfolios with regards to if it was a rights holder, not knowing if there's going to be an event taking place. From a brand point of view, they've invested all this money from a sponsorship point of view, and you know what are they really investing into if this thing is not going to take place? So straight off the bat, when COVID took place, there was really this sort of panic and uncertainty around what are we actually going to be doing? What are we actually sponsoring? Who's going to actually put on an event? And we had quite a lot of work that we did on a global scale from both sides. On the one side, from the rights holder point of view, really trying to understand what does that mean? Do they pay back sponsorship fees? What are the value of the rights that they're giving back? Or if they can't give hospitality, for example, which completely disappeared, you know, how can they increase it from a broadcast point of view? Or, you know, if it does come back, can they do something on social media? A lot of the kind of rights holders pivoted and really used this kind of digital space to deliver to the brands. And then from a brand's point of view, a lot of the work that we did locally was really to analyze the sponsorship portfolios. As the pandemic went on, the marketing budgets were obviously under massive pressure.
Yeah, I know.
And a lot of the a lot of the brands came to us and really needed help with regards to, we've got this kind of overinflated sponsorship portfolio. Some of our sponsorships have just been kind of there historically, CEO's choice,
yeah.
You know, those sort of deals. And we really want to try and understand what is working for us, what is not working for us, and how do we cut those sort of things. So we were pretty busy during that time period. It's, the whole industry was under massive pressure, but from a kind of seeing ourselves as still this independent leader in that space, we kind of the brands and rights holders really came to us for advice when they needed it most, which in a weird way, sometimes when things are going well, you can just shoot from the hip and you can make sure. Those sort of sponsorship decisions and commercial decisions, but when you're under pressure and you've got to now deliver to a board or deliver back to a brand, then you've got to lean back on some solid research and data.
Well, even prior to COVID, I mean, we had a bit of a recession, so budgets were getting scrutinized. So it was very much like you can't shoot from the hip anymore. But like the whole thing that I find interesting about the pandemic is that sports fans were changing so much. Like we went through that horrible period on social media where people just were naming like their dream Bok 15 for like 3 weeks because there was nothing to talk about. People just kept interacting around nothingness. But then it kind of, I think, almost hastened the digital kind of climate even more in that suddenly sports fans weren't sports fans anymore. They were now watching Netflix a whole bunch more. They were now maybe digital gaming. They're maybe getting into esports a bit more. Suddenly, all the competitors in my mind started coming to the fore. Whereas in the past, you know how your week was. You would get through certain information, watch your team on Saturday, be pretty happy, a couple of beers, rinse, repeat, carry on. But then with sports was taken away, suddenly you're doing different things with your time. Now, my biggest question to you is, as rights holders, we can go through in various sections. Obviously, this isn't one answer. As rights holders, as brands, as teams, you know, they've had to kind of work a little bit harder now to get the eyeballs. Is this something that you're seeing that people are now realizing? Because I'm pretty sure we've seen this in America, international markets. Locally, do you feel like there's a lot more urgency for these platforms to do more to actually engage with their fans?
So I must say, from the research that we've done on a global scale, Nielsen releases these sort of trends reports every year where we really look at what's happening on a global scale. And I think in pre-COVID, Africa were probably lagging 12 to 18 months behind those kind of trends with regards to picking up on certain things and implementing it, be it in stadium or be it digital. The pandemic has probably accelerated that in the sense that it's now almost 24 months where we're really lagging behind. And I'm not sure if our rights holders and our events and our teams and federations and unions really use this opportunity to relook at themselves. Have they looked internally?
I mean, if you just think of that, like, you know, in your career, I know in mine, 2 years is a very, very long time. And to know that you're behind in that, that's a lot of work. Like, that's quite a daunting thing to realize. You've got that much work to do.
No, exactly. So, you know, we were always lagging, but now the fact that we're lagging that much further behind, if we look at what's happening from a global sponsorship point of view with the betting industry and the NFTs and the cryptos and the esports space, you know, we just don't see that in South Africa. We just don't see that in Africa. As much as we want to have big gaming events and big NFT sponsorships and crypto investments taking place and kind of fan tokens being developed, these things are happening on a global scale. It's not as if it's not happening, but in South Africa, when are we going to see it? You know, we've just only recently had our first full stadium and people attending an event with no masks and no mandates. So there's other things that we've been worrying about kind of in the last 2 years and not really doing some introspection as a rights holder and looking at, is the product that we're offering to our fans, is it the best product that we could possibly be offering? When are we positioning it? How are we going to package this thing? You know, what is the younger fan going to consume? How, where are they going to consume it? Because all those things have changed from a pandemic point of view. And I'm not certain that our rights holders have really hit the nail on the head there.
So the way I see it is that when I was growing up, I was a regional sports fan. I grew up, I watched Western Province. I went to Newlands. I read the Cape Times, and there was kind of things that made me regional. Now you look at it, because you just mentioned there, how are they getting younger audiences? If you're growing up right now, you can be a Chicago Bulls fan. You can be a Delhi Daredevils cricket fan. you can be a fan of anything really because you are so engaged. All of these really international markets, they've got this always on kind of policy. So you're always engaging with fans. There isn't this always like, I have to now watch at a certain time. There are so many different things, so many different packages, and so many different ways to stream this nowadays. So do you think that, it's interesting you put that whole thing about 2 years. Not only are we behind certain trends, is that our audience isn't kind of just geographically loyal anymore. Is this something that, again, like you have the interest and you have the engagement with local authorities. How do we, is there a plan of action to say, if we want to get the next generation of sports fans, we need to do something quite simple, something quite special to get the loyalty in. Is this like a big focus that you see more and more now? And this whole thing about being a digital fan, maybe using far too many words here, but the whole thing about digital fans aren't just loyal because they can be fans of any team. Is this something you see more happening locally?
So, I think it's got the whole digital side and the digital connection has really kind of accelerated during the pandemic, and we've got to go back and look at essentially us as human beings. Are these connection human beings? We want to connect with each other, be it at a stadium, be it at a bar, be it at an event. The research that we've done into really segmenting sports fans, the South African sports fans are predominantly connection fans. We segment sports fans into 7 different segments, and really to try and understand what is their relationship that they've got, and not necessarily demographic, what do they look like, but really what is the relationship with them, what they've got. And we've done that across rugby, and we've done that across cricket, and really dominates in the South African landscape as connection fans. We are connection people. If you think of our top lifestyle activities from a research point of view that we've done over the last 10-15 years, the top lifestyle activity is braaiing. And braaiing is not cooking food. Braaiing is just a connection activity where we stand around a fire and connect with each other. And that's where the digital space really comes in. Is we've lost, across the pandemic, we lost this kind of connection where we couldn't connect with each other, and we went into other areas where we wanted to connect with each other. And so from the digital side, it really accelerated that, where now all of a sudden we were on fantasy sports leagues and talking to each other. A lot more WhatsApp groups, a lot more Telegram groups were being created during the pandemic, and we were connecting with each other in that digital way. A lot of the digital technology, the Uber Eats and the delivery companies and the Pick and Pays and the Checkers 6060s and those sort of companies have really accelerated, and people have started using them, but we've managed to connect in this digital space. So we still want to connect with each other. At the end of the day, us as human beings, they open the stadiums and people flock, 51,000 people flock into a stadium to go and watch a rugby match. And from a connection fan point of view, that is really the crux of it, and why this digital space has taken off so much is because of that connection. We wanted to connect with each other, and the companies that have managed to grab onto that, the betting businesses have created these digital networks and digital platforms, and people are connecting on there. We're talking to each other about who you placing your bet on, where you betting, what are you doing. And then the global rights holders, you so correctly put it, they've really seen that opportunity. We've got the La Liga offices that are in Joburg. They've got an office in Joburg. They've got 6 or 7 offices around the world. NBA now recently launching a league in Africa and have an office in Joburg and in Senegal. So the global rights holders are realizing that, their fans in that little area, the little Western Cape, reading the Burger or reading the Beeld and going to Newlands, gone are those days where now, you can become a NBA fan, you can become a Man United fan or Chelsea fan or Arsenal fan, and you've never even gone to the UK because you can build that connection with that rights holder through those digital platforms. And they've make it easy for you to be able to build those relationships with them. The NFT platforms, a lot of the football teams now are developing their own fan tokens, which is just another way of me being able to connect with the community, forming part of that community, becoming a so-called shareholder in that community of fans. So the crux of it is really that connection, and then this digital era has really been driven through this pandemic and really just accelerated because of the fact that we weren't able to sit across the room from each other and we had to connect in other ways.
So all the kind of things you mentioned there always speak to resources. So I think my initial question was kind of all over the place, but what I'm trying to get at is, how do local South African sporting teams, franchises, whatever, because, I mean, there's two parts to this question. The URC teams are now becoming more global, as in they're becoming more European. Okay, so that's a really, really good thing. But now, how are like local rugby teams, local cricket teams, football teams, how are they able to do that? Because all the things you mentioned there are quite resource heavy. To be able to get to the point where you've got amazing apps. So if your team is based in England, you've got a fan base in Taiwan. Why? Because of all the connection points you just mentioned. All these great digital resources that they use. So we know that they're growing and they're going to flourish. Like NFL teams, NBA teams, they've got global audiences because they've been doing this for a very long time. And now with the advent of NFTs and these fan tokens, really cool. Can see how all this is going. But then I look at like, you know, how does a local South African team really compete with this? Is it very much a case of they have to just try and get their loyal audiences down with a decent formula and try to build out from that? Or is it purely down to a resource thing where it's like a fifth division football team trying to get big talent to rise up? You know, do you feel that void's only going to get bigger because of the whole digital expansion?
Well, the digital thing makes it global. You mentioned earlier around the sports fans and the younger sports fans, this kind of 16 to 30-year-old sports fan at the moment is, you know, consuming content through their PlayStations and Xboxes and sort of, you know, really just engaging with different teams and different leagues around the world and becoming fans of those leagues. And it is a massive risk for the local teams, local PSL teams, local rugby teams, local cricket teams. You know, it's a massive risk in the sense that we are no longer just bound to be fans of our regional team or that kind of attend that event or go to that rugby match or football match. We now can watch and consume anything right around the world, be it this kind of direct to consumer platforms or be it through the broadcasters or be it through social media. So it is a massive risk. The answer for me would have been that we needed to have used COVID to really look at ourselves, look at our leagues and teams, and fundamentally, are we making it easy for our teams to become fans? In the football space, there's constantly clubs being bought and sold and names being changed. So, you know, Bloemfontein Celtic fan base, they were fans and now they're gone. You know,
they were the greatest singers and dancers in live stadiums.
Exactly, and it's not just from a football point of view. You know, we look at it from a cricket point of view. We've had how many name changes with the teams, how many leagues have been started. Yeah, you know, are you a fan of the Lions?
I live next door to the Wanderers. I still don't know what the local team is called.
Yeah, are you the Josie Stars or are you the Gauteng Lions? Are you the Central Gauteng Lions? Who are you? So that makes it difficult from a rights holder point of view. We haven't made it easy for our fans to become fans, and we've got to understand that it's not just going to change overnight. You don't just change your name and do a bit of marketing and put up a couple of billboards and hope that fans are going to buy into that product. It takes a while, and that's why, you know, you look at in the football space, your dominant two teams are still Pirates and Chiefs from a fan base point of view, and rightfully Sundowns are coming up very quickly and building that fan base. But they also know it. You know, it's not just about winning trophies. Building those loyal fan base takes time. And so, you know, in the football space, as an example, if you have to advise a young kid who you must support, at least you know Chiefs and Pirates are not going to be bought and sold in the next season. So maybe you can tell him that that's a safe bet to support a team. So have we done ourselves any justice in this country from a rights holder point of view to make it easy for the fans? No. And then from a broadcast point of view on the other side, broadcast, digital content consumption, that's just become easier and easier and easier for fans to engage with tournaments, events, leagues, teams right around the world. And not a lot of it just costing the young fan any money. You can become a fan of a football team through Twitter or through TikTok or any social platform. So that makes it difficult in the space from a local point of view.
Yeah, that's such a key insight there. It's like you need to make fans make it easy. And no one, I think, has done it better in recent times than Formula One in that. Sure, historically, they had this amazing global fan base. They had the heritage. They have brands like Mercedes and Ferrari all getting involved, so it's global. But it was only until the Netflix thing came about that people really actually find it easy to get involved, because normally it would be Lewis Hamilton and some other guys who aren't as good. Now you're looking at Team Haas. Whoever the hell they were, like, prior to that show was nowhere. But it's such a great example, and I think that, again, success speaks to it, that other people are now getting involved. There's going to be like a Tour de France one. The PGA Tour have got into this whole making it easy for the fans of a Netflix show that's coming out by the same people. And now we see with this whole Live Golf thing as well, is that that is completely based on making it easy for the fan. Everyone tees up at the same time. It's 3 days. You've got – it's a, just having the three-day thing and having everything, you can see every single kind of shot. They really are trying to go against that. What are the – I don't want to get into Live Golf conversation because there's too many of those going around right now. For better or for worse, I actually kind of like it. But historically, in the last – as you say, like, teams have been ahead of the curve compared to local South African teams. Who are the federations or sports in general that you feel have really embraced this historically and just built on that from strength to strength? COVID aside, they've just done a really good job.
From a local or global?
So like global, you know, because ultimately we need – like, I would love conversations like this to kind of make local markets or, say, developing markets understand that it's not a nice to have anymore. This is like your future. This is a sink or swim moment here, that the digital fan has got certain expectations. And if you're not part of that mix, then you're basically not going to survive in 5 years' time. So, like, if in your experience, like, what have been some of the best blueprints of making it easy for fans?
So one of the best as a global leader has been the NBA. The NBA have led the way, you know, from really being ahead of the curve with regards to anything from a content point of view. And they realized that when they, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you know, you were almost prohibited to take a photo at an event or take a video at an event or a live match because no, that content belongs to the broadcaster, it belongs to the rights holder. And the NBA changed that, where they started encouraging their fans at events and at matches to take videos, take content, share our content, and we'll start rewarding you for sharing that content. So that's really flipping it on the script, flipping the script over, where it wasn't this kind of, you know, content protection, but really using the fans to become their kind of content distributors. And they realize that and they very quickly, you know, have stayed ahead of the curve in that space. Their commissioner, you know, is one of the greatest quotes in this kind of Netflix space that you speak about. You know, he says that you can't just wait for the matches every Saturday. You've got to constantly feed this fan content, and so, you know, you've got to keep this fan snacking, as he calls it. You've got to, you know, constantly feed them.
Such a good way of putting it, because consumption is a very, like, telling thing with all humans, really.
Yeah, exactly. So if you keep this fan snacking throughout the week, then they're going to consume your content on the weekends when there's a match on. But, you know, and at least from a sport point of view, it's probably the only content left that will do, you know, that will find a time for and will actually schedule that in our diaries and in our calendars, because we know that the live event kicks off at 5 o'clock or at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, where majority of other content, we just consume it when we want to consume it. You don't just have to wait for that live event or the live broadcast to come in. I'm not sure when last you watched something with ads and but it's tedious.
It'd be tedious, yeah. And the thing is, I have the ability to not have to do that, so therefore I won't.
Exactly. So, you know, from a Netflix content point of view, yes, they've done that phenomenally. The Formula One have done it phenomenally. And to bring it back in the local sense, because I get this question all the time in the sense of, what should our local leagues do? How are we going to capitalize on this kind of Netflix era? And it might not be to you know, create a Netflix series, but we've got to go and have a look at, what are South Africans consuming? What are the majority of South Africans consuming? You know, are they still consuming soapies and movies and they really buy into that across the Mzansi Magics and across the SABC channels? These soapies, the Generations and the Sievandelaans and the, you know, all these soapies are really doing well still year in and year out, and people keep consuming them. So how do we take that mix and bring into a Kaizer Chiefs? You know, is it the Real Housewives of Kaizer Chiefs? Or is it a content show built around the PSL behind the scenes? It doesn't have to be a copy and paste of what they're doing in the States or what Netflix are doing. We've got to look at what is the local content.
To do that, because it's a proven formula, but, you know, surely you've got to have your consumer in mind.
Exactly. So if we look at our South African fan and our South African, general population, what are they consuming? We think that South Africans are all sports mad love and we just want to watch sport all the time. But there's a lot of South Africans that are consuming content that's not sport. You know, the lifestyle side of things and the music side of things and other entertainment, they're consuming a massive amount of that. And so the sports in this country have got to realize that it's not just, we're going to put on a Chiefs Pirates derby and everyone's going to flock there and the viewership's just going to keep going up year in, year out. We've got to make sure that we tap into those. What is the average South African consuming and how are we going to build this kind of sports narrative story behind the scenes lifestyle content into that? Because that's going to be that's where we're going to see that kind of Netflix Formula One growth. If we can get that right, what is that content and how do we blend the sport into it?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just, I look at this and I see opportunity because people have done things in a certain way. And those certain ways just aren't going to be there anymore. The consumer or the fan wants to consume things, as you say, on an ongoing basis. So you can't just think, cool, live events, obviously that's enough for us. I think the UFC has done such a great job in that. Obviously, they were the only ones that were like, screw the pandemic, we're coming back as quickly as we can. And I know that's when it's the UFC every month. So UFC 276 just took place over the weekend. From Monday through to Sunday morning, I have content to consume, as you mentioned. And like everything you say there, it talks to my UFC experience. It is now my favorite sport. But yeah, because of that, because of what they give me, it's like this bread trail towards the event. Sometimes the event's almost an anticlimax because you're so hyped up about it. But now, I mentioned the whole URC. So now there's a great example. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to have the answers for your local cricket team in Joburg that's going to now become global. It's a very different conversation. But now the URC, look at the Stormers, for instance. They've just made a decent amount of money after winning the URC. They've now got to expand their team. They're in this new stadium. They're in a whole new world because now they've got multiple competitions. So it's becoming like a football kind of thing. That you do well, you need a bigger squad because you're going to have more match days. So there they have an opportunity to maybe move into other markets. Is this something that you would imagine the URC teams are looking at going, if we have more of a European fan base, because obviously people immigrate from South Africa, there's an example right there, how different do you reckon their marketing mix is going to be going forward now? And like, what would be some of the things that you could recommend for teams like this, what they should be mindful of if they were looking to get into new markets?
Yeah, it's interesting. The URC teams and when this URC competition started, I think everyone was very skeptical about it and everyone thought, why are we moving away from Australia, New Zealand? Is this going to work? And in the first few weeks when our teams started taking hidings, we even thought it was going to be even worse and this is a terrible competition to be involved in. And then in the end, we've got two South African teams playing in the final. The fan base thing is definitely something that they're going to be tapping into. I think, the local stats from a viewership point of view are not where Super Rugby used to be as yet. And I think they're growing and the final viewership in South Africa was great. From a European, UK point of view, the viewership numbers that we've seen are just flying. So they've, broken all the records from a their previous competition of their Pro 14 competition, so they've broken all of those records in that sense. And that's great to see that the European UK market is really jumping on board with that. Maybe it's because of the Rugby World Cup taking place in Europe next year and there's a lot more hype and we see these sort of trends taking place when there's Olympic Games or Rugby World Cup or FIFA World Cup taking place.
Sure, but I mean, it's international times of rugby basically.
No, exactly. And I had an interesting conversation last week with CEO of the Sharks, and he was saying, they're going to base themselves in Switzerland, and then they're going to have a strong kind of target London, and really to say, okay, could this potentially be a place where we might in the future open up an office, or we might potentially have a second home base in London. So yeah, they're definitely thinking about that and definitely looking at that target market as a specific target market, because if you look at that from a sponsorship point of view, The bigger your fan base can become, the more broader your fan base can become, the bigger your sponsorship portfolio can become. So from an income point of view, that's essentially at the end of the day what those teams want to generate. They want more revenue into their team so that they can boost those teams and boost those squads, as you so rightfully say. But they need the sponsorship money. And if you've got now massive exposure across Europe, massive exposure across the UK, you can start, you know, looking at UK brands, the Cazoos and the Cinches at the moment look like they're sponsoring everything across the UK and Europe. So, you know, maybe next season or the season thereafter, some of the South African teams really start getting some of those UK European brands to become some of their main sponsors.
That's interesting. I think I also believe there'll be a time where there won't just be South African-based teams having mostly South African-based players. Like, you'll get a lot of maybe, I know the Sharks have always had a few French people somewhere along the line. But it is. It's like, you're now European tournament, so why wouldn't you then trade just like football? It's going to become more and more like football, which is great, and it's so exciting. So you mentioned sponsors there. Obviously, the digital fan is something that brands care about because there's something about sport that kind of creates trust. And I think when brands want to get involved in sport, they get involved with the emotion, they get involved with like that fanaticism that makes people loyal towards certain things. I reckon probably more so than most industries, and that is why it is so lucrative. So all the things that you were touching on there about what teams need to do, I mean, how have brands really changed that? I mean, are they forcefully like getting onto the whole digital platform a lot more locally? And again, is it about following international trends, or have you seen digital fans being engaged by brands in a different way locally?
So the brands have really used the whole influencer side of things to their benefit, and have ran a lot of campaigns using different influencers. And nowadays, you know, when you talk about an influencer, it's not necessarily just somebody with a few million followers that gives you a tweet or two. It can be everything from a micro influencer that's got 5,000 followers and he knows all of those 5,000 followers to,
exactly,
you know, somebody in a specific community or somebody in a specific team. So when you talk about influencer, it's not just, you know, pay me a bunch of money and I'll give you a few posts on Instagram. It's really
glorified billboard. Yeah,
exactly. How do you as a brand tap into the teams and events and leagues that I'm sponsoring and use some of those players to talk to their real community? Because some of the players are building really good loyal fan bases across this digital platform, and it doesn't have to be. It's not about having 2 or 20 million followers anymore. It's now really just understanding that fan base. Do your fan base engage with the content that you are posting as an influencer? And if they're engaging with that content, if you have 500 followers, that's great for a brand to be able to tap into those 500 followers if you know what content resonates with that fan base. So from a brand's point of view, we've really seen the brands on a local and global scale, you trying to use that, some better than others, but really trying to go that route when it comes to the digital space of how do we get those people to connect with our influences in an organic way, and really posting content that people are going to resonate with. And it's not just, you know, lying on the beach with a shampoo brand and saying buy the shampoo and tomorrow you've got another shampoo brand. It's really, you know, organic content that these athletes are posting out there. And a lot of the athletes are using their platforms to speak about, you know, massive humanitarian issues, the global warming state and racism, et cetera, et cetera. And these are massive issues. And these athletes are no longer waiting for their PR manager or their brand manager to say what they can and can't speak about. They are being open and honest on their platforms, and they're using those platforms to be open and honest. And if you as a brand can somehow weave your story into that organic content, you know, the engagement goes up and your brand love goes up, and that's great from a brand point of view. So the brands have really tried their best to use that, and I think that that'll continue to be the strategy for the next few years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you're kind of overlapping to my next question around, you know, you look at digital fans, you're getting teams, organizations, federations that want to talk to them. You're getting brands that want to be part of this mix, and then athletes themselves. The whole thing about them being brands isn't even like a buzz term anymore. It's not even like a future kind of thing. They've got to be that way. Now, we all know that talent gets you sort of in the door when it comes to sport. Hard work, dedication, and application makes you a star. But a commercial success, that extra sort of prong there, That is about understanding the digital fan and their needs. So, I mean, again, is this like something you're seeing more locally, like local sports stars now that are coming back to the fore? Are they coming back to the fore looking like they've done some work, or are we still very much behind the curve internationally?
Yeah, we, you know, in, from a global point of view, we definitely still behind when we had to look at our, from even just influencer versus influencer or athlete versus athlete, just, you know, from a media training point of view or from a, you know, just building your own brand and really understanding what it means to have your brand, you know.
See, I always find this a shame because where I can understand a certain player is not going to have a LeBron James audience by numbers. What they do with their audience is something that isn't, there's no restriction to. You should be able to do it because there's no limitation to that. Just because your market size is 10,000 rather than 10 million doesn't mean you've got to interact differently.
Yeah, I guess it's a level of understanding, it's a level of training, it's a level of, you know, really, you know, understanding that you need to build a brand. We've had, you know, a lot of the agents, a lot of the rights holders have been very conservative from a South African point of view with regards to embracing the influencers, embracing their athletes. You know, as soon as an athlete or a player becomes almost bigger than the team or bigger than the rights holder, then the rights holder almost does a 360 and doesn't embrace that athlete and doesn't use that athlete and, you know, build the schedule around that athlete because we know what commercial value that athlete's going to bring to the team and to the event and to the eventual commercial partners. So maybe from a rights holder point of view, we haven't really, we're almost scared that our athletes are going to become too big and that they're going to become bigger than our teams. And if you look at from a global point of view, that's exactly what it is. You know, the global athletes are much bigger than the teams. When global athletes move, you know, Ronaldo moves from a Juventus to back to the UK, and there's a Facebook group that has a few million fans. Juventus Forever changes, you know, its name to Man United Forever, and it's just that whole digital space can change so quickly following these individual athletes around. In the South African sense, our IPL players are bigger stars in India than what they potentially are in South Africa. And have we embraced them in the sense that, you know, AB de Villiers, David Miller, what does your schedule look like? How do we tap into your fan base? Because we know that you guys are massive fans or you've got massive fan bases around the world and in India and Pakistan and Bangladesh. And we know that that's a key market for us. So how do we use that? So from a rights holder point of view, we probably try to hold back our players a bit. So if we look at some of the interviews that our players are still doing,
which is an absolute shame, because again, it comes back to almost like an ego thing. It's like understanding the state of the digital fan, their power, their reach, their size. That should be really part of the first part of the conversation here.
No, exactly, and so, you know, it's a level of understanding, and then and working together and embracing that and making sure that we at the end of the day grow that fan base, grow the game, grow the commercial opportunities for everyone involved. It's not just, you know, if you think of a football team or a rugby team, you know, all of, you know, from the start, if you want to have a digital fan base, you've got 15 players. Is there that could potentially be your first 15 digital, you know, influencers just for your team or just for your sponsors. So instead of, you know, looking outwards and saying we must build our fan base, be like the NBA and flip the script and embrace the players, bring in the players, train the players, show the players how they can, you know, what they can do and what they can't do and how you want them to grow the team in an organic way. Every player does his own thing and you've just got to, you know, be that catalyst that just allows them the opportunity to express themselves, and then at the end of the day, they'll grow your team.
It's such a good point, and it's something that we try hammer home in business all the time, but there's always the hesitancy. And I think as well, there's like quite a lot of naivety around, as you say, the control, when teams are so worried about these people getting bigger. But when you look at what the digital fan wants, they want the player. They don't want to say like, okay, well, I'm first and foremost, the team is everything. Sure, if you live in a small part of England and traditionally your season ticket's like the most important thing in your world, I get that, but it's all migrated because the fan has more options. I think that's where we're coming to with this. So there must be some very frustrating parts in your line of work, because you know how things can get better. And it's not always about having millions and millions of dollars in budget. And you know how if teams can work cohesively towards a plan, their fan bases would swell, the commercial rights would obviously improve. But going forward now in a digital sense, like what are the things that you feel are quite exciting from a fan's perspective? And then what do you think the next 5 years could be implemented that will be quite revolutionary? Bearing in mind, we've obviously had some big leaps in the last 10 years with digital things coming in, social media integration, streaming options. These are all things that have really kind of come onto our radar. What do you feel like in the next 5 years that you can obviously speak locally and internationally here? What are the things that you're most excited about that you've seen trends happening and how are we going to start seeing more of?
Well, we've got to understand this digital fan. We've got to understand them first and foremost, and I think that's the crux of it. We've got to understand that they're these multi-screen beings that are watching, you know, a broadcast, but also on their phone and also doing emails on the side on their laptop. And we've got to understand that they're not going to give you kind of this unrestricted or undivided attention. And if we understand that, and we know, okay, they're going to be consuming our content potentially across multiple platforms. At the same time, then we've got to make sure that our strategies from a Ratzelda point of view has got to be built around that. So that's going to be interesting to see in the global sense. I'm very excited to see how, you know, the fan tokens and the NFTs take off and how that, you know, plays off into South Africa and which South African team is going to be the first to really take a bold step in that direction.
You mentioned this earlier, and obviously there's a bit of a, it's not a good time of crypto right now. But what do you think that the thing that's holding back the most? Is it like the apprehension around cryptocurrency or just the inability to embrace new technology? Because when you see NFTs, people just think, I don't want a picture of a monkey or I don't want a picture of like a cartoon or whatever. But NFTs, the first iteration basically is this whole art thing. But it's a payment gateway. It's a way of having like a currency and having a value of something. So, I mean, I always just thought that NFTs should be like season tickets. And on there, you can build your NFTs for every team. So would you say locally there's just an apprehension around it because of the format and because it's new?
Yeah, I think we really just don't understand it. And I think people don't, before they go and read up about it, before they go and, you know, really understand it, they just almost get frightened and say no, this is not for us. This is definitely not for our fan base. We're not going to have these sort of fans in South Africa.
It's so malleable. It is what you make of it. Like, it really is. It's not like you now have to buy these things and you're on a different stock exchange or some other thing.
No, exactly.
You really can make these things exactly how you want them.
100%, and I think the teams that have embraced it on a global scale are seeing it primarily as building that digital community. And if we build that digital community and we you know, allow, this is another platform, another area where we can have a fan be part of that digital community. You can essentially be a so-called shareholder because you've got this fan token. And yes, you might never be able to vote. You might never be able to say who becomes the coach. But you, as a fan, feel I have a little stake here in this football club or in this rugby club or in this rugby league.
That's back to what you say about connection points.
Exactly. So if we can keep building this digital community, be it in different ways, NFTs and this whole area is just another vehicle that we can build that digital connection with these fans. And so from a local point of view, we've got to embrace it and we've got to really have a look at, you know, how are we going to make sure that the fans don't start doing it by themselves and we as rights holders tap into that opportunity before the fans start, you know, doing it by themselves.
Yeah, I think your NBA example there was just so good. Sometimes you've got to relinquish a bit of your control in order to create something far bigger. And again, it's like, in theory, between the two of us sitting here in studio right now, it feels like a very simple thing to do. But there are just so many other mechanisms in place. There's so many different hierarchy structures that won't like that line of thinking. But I just can't see anything else than the sink or swim kind of thing. When you realize that because of the way the digital fan is now looking at things, you are competing with everything. You're competing with every team in the world. You're not just competing with the team in your league. You're not just competing with your own country. Like, it's staggering how this is all kind of ballooned. And as you say, like, if you were not using COVID to get up with this, you're already 2 years behind. So now technically let's add the math and make you about 4 years behind in these different things.
Yeah, exactly. I think from a local point of view, there's always this argument around, you know, if everything is moving into the digital space, South Africans are poor. We don't have enough data. We don't, you know, we won't be able to stream matches. We can't just watch things on TikTok and Instagram and those sort of things. So that's definitely a concern for a lot of the rights holders. As soon as you start pushing them in the space of saying you've got to embrace this digital fan, the first thing that usually comes back is data costs are too expensive. People are not going to want to consume it on you know, on their smartphones. But those sort of things are changing, and our strategies have got to keep up with the cost of data are going to come down. More and more South Africans are accessing the internet. Our last stats from an internet point of view is around 66% of South Africans now have access to the internet. That's a massive portion of South Africans that somewhere along the line, be it at work, be it at school, be it at university, have got some form of access to the internet.
And that was the prioritizing it because of what's available through that.
And it's a scary thing to think, are we still talking about access to the internet? If you have to, you know, ask people, do you have access to the internet in the UK and Europe? It's almost a
strange question. It's like running water.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's definitely something that is accelerating. And then our biggest thing that we've got to embrace in South Africa are smartphones and these mobile networks are definitely, people are walking around before they've got a TV, before they've got a laptop, before they sometimes have a car or house, they've got some form of smartphone or feature phone that they've got in their pockets, or, you know, they're sitting in public transport for a few hours a day. How are we embracing those fans? You know, earlier mentioned around gaming and esports. In South Africa, the esports space is very, very small and very difficult to get into. But the gaming side of things, people like gamification. Everything is gamified nowadays. Sure. From your FNB e-bucks to your Discovery Vitality to everything that you do and every rewards card that you've got. And so a lot of South Africans might not be watching, you know, streaming matches in their public transport, but they're sitting and playing Candy Crush, or they're sitting and reading something on their phone while they're sitting in public transport. And so that's where we've got to look at. We've got to look at, you know, we might not be the Netflix creator Formula One series, but we've got to look at where are South Africans consuming their content? What are they consuming the content on? If they've only got 1 gig of data, what are they going to spend that gig of data on? Are we as rights holders on the top of their mind that that's what they want to spend their 1 gig of data on? This month they want to consume your content on a different platform, and are you allowing them, do you give them the opportunity to consume your content using their minimal data that they might have?
Sean, there's a lot of things to wrap up here as far as just insights to take out, because, you know, you are armed with all these kind of things, but I like the way you simplify it so easily. Make it easy for fans to be fans. First and foremost, you've got to relinquish something. You've got to become part of a bigger network to create a bigger network. But the streaming thing's the last thing I want to talk about, because obviously that's a big topic with players coming into the market that never used to be there. I know there was big talk around Facebook getting into the streaming space. Disney, you know, they all know, okay, well, Disney, ESPN, they've got that link anywhere. They all know that fans want to see things all over the place. I think F1, you know, someone made a great example to me the other day that they don't have DStv Premium anymore. So that's what, like, just call it R1,000 a month to get what, oh, it's obviously the greatest sporting package in the entire world. I think it's worth every cent. But this friend of mine said, like, all I really care about is F1, really. And I got Netflix. So I go straight to F1. That's how I stream everything. I get all the qualifications, I get all the commentary, I get all the insights, and I get the race. How are you seeing that realistically shaking up more in the future? And is it something that Supersport could change their business forever as a result? Or will you see kind of smaller players coming to the fore locally as well?
Yeah, I guess it's the million-dollar question that everyone in that multi-choice Supersport building.
Yeah, I even battled trying to ask the right question around it, because you kind of know what's inevitably happening. You know how the digital fan is engaging things and what they desire. So you kind of know those things in place. But how does the rest of the sort of pie sort of work for the next sort of 5-10 years?
So, I mean, the streaming side of things is something that in 5 years time we're not going to talk about it. We don't talk about linear TV anymore. We don't say, you know, is linear TV or free-to-air TV something that we need to be thinking about. The streaming platform is basically just allowing fans to take their live content wherever they want to take it, and they don't have to carry their, you know, 50-inch TV around when they when they're walking around. From a Supersport point of view, you know, and again, I think they've identified a really great community, and be it in the Supersport Schools side, that Supersport Schools platform is basically targeting schools, parents, teachers, kids.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we spoke about that last week with Kooks. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a great example.
Their app is almost close to 150,000 downloads now. So that app is growing massively every week around that digital community, that community of people that need that specific content. And you said, you know, correctly with the Formula One side, with these direct to consumer, people are consuming their content you know, they're going directly to that platform and paying the fee that they want to pay for that content. And, you know, the NBA being leaders in that space, again, they can give you the last chucker for a certain amount. So, you know, you don't have to buy the whole match. You don't have to buy the whole season. Just buy the last 20 minutes. And I mean, you know, Springbok Test match, you can probably buy the last 10 minutes and know what's going to happen because a lot changes in that last 10 minutes. So yeah, the models are definitely going to change. The pricing models are going to change in the next 5 years. The streaming side of things is here to stay, but how that's going to fit into that content kind of packaging and model and pricing model, that's the million-dollar question that I'm sure everyone at MultiChoice and Supersport are trying to figure out. Correctly, you know, from a linear TV point of view, there's definitely not a better package in the world if you think of what's happening in from a UK, from a Europe, from a even the States with some of the golf majors. You've got to watch the Thursday and Friday on two different platforms and the behind the scenes on another platform, where from a Supersport point of view, that linear content offering that they've got there is world class. I think from a Supersport point of view, and I don't want to talk on their behalf, but on a Supersport point of view, they've always been aggregators of content, and they've been a platform where you can watch everything on with one subscription, and potentially that might be the way that they would want to go. You know, on one platform, one subscription, you do have access to a Formula One TV, you do have access to an NBA league pass, you do have access to a La Liga TV, you do have access to Disney Plus and Netflix. So potentially those different streaming providers could become, you know, different channels like they have been on the DStv offering in the last couple of years.
So much to consider. The digital fan is only growing in importance, I think, in the greater sporting landscape. And it's been great, like, you know, being part of this, of the days of not having this, of only, like, watching rugby at a certain time. I mean, I remember back in the day, things weren't commercially minded. So if South Africa was playing in New Zealand, you'd watch a game at 4:30. You know, being young and understanding that, and being where we are right now and all the things we've spoken about today, it's a very exciting kind of transition. Where can people find more of you online? And obviously you do share quite a lot on Twitter.
Yeah, I'll try and share as much as we can from a social media point of view. Try and be involved in as many articles and white papers as what we possibly can. We've just put together a really exciting betting report, which is available for the South African market, really trying to look at the betting fan and trying to understand that betting market in South Africa. So from a South African point of view, you know, we try and share as much of the content as possible online, social media, through our Nielsen.com website.
And actual social media handles? You've got to plug yourself better, John.
Yeah, on Twitter and on LinkedIn, just Jean_Villas is probably the two best platforms that you'll find me on. Not there on the TikTok platform yet, or on that side. I think that's, you know, in closing, I guess that's probably the scary reality that we've got to think of this fan. You know, these kids are now being born and they've got an Instagram page already. Their parents have created it. They've got more followers than you and I on Instagram, and they haven't even opened their own account yet. So that fan is just going to keep growing because they are born into social media. They're born into this digital space. Absolutely. It's not something that they've got to learn, or something that they've got to get used to, or some subscription that they've got to get. That's you know, they are there now, and they've going to consume it and embrace that space constantly.
Yeah, it's exciting, and it's so clear to me. The fact that people are still kind of on the fence towards how these things and how they embrace it is very kind of worrying. But, you know, like I say, it's a very exciting space. I'm very excited for where you and your company are going with this, because the data, the insights, the analytics around this, there is there is money to be made, I think, if you're very smart within this business. And I hope people utilize you a lot more as a result of this.
Let's hope so. And yeah, thanks for your time. I think these sort of discussions need to take place more often. And the rights holder space in this country have got to embrace this, and then the brands will follow.
Yeah, and also I think if we get smarter in this kind of space, we create better offerings for the fan as well. So you know, I'm all about creating all these win-wins, and I think there's some great ones ahead. Next week, we are getting into the state of drugs in sport, which is something I'm massively excited about. So we'll catch you then.